Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a wonderful edition of Soul of a Gamer podcast.
Woohoo!
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steven.
And just so everyone's aware and everyone's in the same loop, we are a previously unheard podcast by many. We have decided to reset.
Yeah.
We had a catalog of quite a few episodes, but we didn't feel like we were doing a good enough job really pulling in new people and showing them what these games are really cool and, like, everything about the game that makes it cool. We were over-explaining things. We were doing things that we thought were too much. So we've condensed it, and we think we've made it better.
100%.
So, and this is not for new listeners, clearly. You guys won't know the difference. You won't give a shit. But for older listeners, just so you know, this is our reset. We are starting over with a more interesting concept, we think.
Yeah. One that's a lot less in-depth, doesn't spoil everything for you in case you haven't played the game, and gives just a more realistic review of why you should or shouldn't buy the game.
For sure. And then as well as, we want to tell you a story. So we're not just going to tell you our review of the game, we're going to tell you a story about why and how the game was made.
Yeah.
So,
very interesting stuff on some of these, actually.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be a lot of fun for you guys, so please stay tuned, check us out. By the time this comes out, we'll have a website up. We'll have all of our sources on said website. We'll have everything we need on there for you guys. And you'll be able to email us and just, you know, chat with us. If you want to email us, please. It's soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. Took me a second. I'm like, what is it? soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any requests or anything you want to just ask us, go ahead. Shoot for it. Fucking send up us
any questions, and we'll maybe put up a section at one of these points of just all of the questions you guys have for us.
Yeah, for sure. The first part that we like to talk about here in these episodes is going to be, what are we playing this fucking week?
Yes.
So, Steven, what are the hell are you playing?
So, I've been playing about two games this week. One of them is kind of a throwback, and the other one's something brand new that you're probably going to laugh at a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with that one. I've been playing Lawn Mowing Simulator.
I'm not surprised. Actually, all the simulator games are just so good for getting, like, unbored,
it's great,
right?
Time killers.
Yeah, like, that's all they're for.
You feel so accomplished. Like, there's something so, like, pleasing about them for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't mind, like, mowing a lawn, but, like, I hate being outside. I have to deal with the bugs. I have to deal with the smell, the mess, all this other stuff, having to worry about the actual machine itself. But playing it in a video game, somehow, it gives me that same, like, happiness and excitement of doing it, but without actually having to actually get up and do it. It's weird. It's stupid, but it's enjoyable. I don't know why.
Okay.
Like, this is a Power Wash Simulator I really fall in love with.
People love Power Wash Simulator. I've heard that's
Power
one
Wash
of the Simulator's best
ones. Power Wash Simulator is the best, dude. That's insane. I love that. That game got me hooked right away. Lawn Mowing Simulator is a little harder to start, I feel like, but you actually, it's a whole business. It's not just, like, mowing a lawn. You actually create a lawn mowing business, and you can buy, like, bigger and bigger headquarters with more vehicle bays and hire employees and do all these, like, it gets pretty in-depth, and you can get, like, $150 million business at one point.
Damn. Like, it sounds kind of like Zug Tycoon or, like, Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah, it's, like, way in-depth, and I'm like, this is actually better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So I've been enjoying that.
All right. That's nice. So what's your second one?
Yeah. Minecraft. Me and my wife got back into Minecraft.
Yeah, I know.
We jump back in, like, once a year or twice a year.
You spend maybe 3 to 4 weeks playing, and then you put it back down for another year. That's usually how it goes.
Yep.
Minecraft is a classic. You can't beat Minecraft.
Well, and with all the updates that keep happening to the game, the game is the most incredible it's ever been.
Yeah, I kind of miss it, though. Before all the updates were coming out, like, every month, an update would come out, like, every 6 months to a year or something, and it would be so fucking exciting. Like, they put cats in the game. Oh my god.
Like, well, I mean, they still have those big updates, and, like, the last few have been insane and wild updates, and, like, the next one that's coming out is going to be just the amount of customization and stuff you can do in these games now is just insane.
Yeah.
And, like, the Underdark area they added last time is terrifying. I've never been more scared playing Minecraft than in the Underdark cities.
I hope they add some of the mods that people made, because the mods are for Minecraft are fucking sweet.
Oh yeah,
I love those
mods.
I
mean, I don't know if you've seen like the warden, the news.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh god, dude, that thing's terrifying.
It is terrifying. It's in those special little rooms that you have to dig to.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like negative 50 underground or yep. whatever. It's so fun. But what have you been playing?
So this week, so funny story. A few years ago, you know, my wife and I got a dog. Yes. And said dog, I had just replaced the battery for my Pokemon Crystal game.
Yes.
And my dog decided to take it off the counter and chew it. Nearly to death. Yeah, so... And this week I was kind of messing with it. I was, cause my wife was going garage sale shopping or whatever. And someone I know had just went garage sale hopping and had found Pokemon Red, a Nintendo, Game Boy SP, Game Boy, just a regular Game Boy Color, a couple games with that. Like it was a good haul, $15.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was like,
that's a steal.
So I heard she was going to a garage sales and I was like, okay, well, here's what I need you to do. I need you to go look for Pokemon games, but it's really important that you find the real ones. Cause there's a bunch of fake ones out there. And I still have that Pokemon Crystal. It's chewed the fuck at the top. Like the entire top of the game cartridge is open, like exposing the motherboard to the air pretty much.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so this is what it looks like. This is the screw you're looking for because the screws in those are special. They're only released by Nintendo. No one can replicate them. And then I was like, if you open it up, I'm going to give you my special screwdriver that opens it up. You could see that the motherboard is this big. The emulator ones, they're half the size of this. They hide them in like the shitty cartridge cases that you can't see through.
Oh, okay.
And then I noticed like as I'm doing that, I'm like, you know what's weird? The bottom of this motherboard is crooked. Because when I tried it originally, it wouldn't start. Like, the game would start. It had the black little ring across the bottom of it. Like, you could blow on in the day and get rid of it. So I'm like, huh. So I straighten it out, and I put it in a Game Boy just to see. And it fucking works. And I'm like, no fucking way. So now I just need to go. I'm having someone 3D print a cartridge for me. But that inspired me to play Pokemon Gold on my emulator. And I've just been having fun playing Pokemon Gold again. And then... Of course, I'm playing Baldur's Gate still, trying to finish Act 3.
Nice.
Giant fucking suffocation of Act 3 that's there.
Oh, dude. Act 3 is massive. It's massive. Insane. But yeah, no, it's actually funny you bring up Pokemon Crystal, because I literally was at the grocery store the other day and got stopped by some random, probably a teenager, who saw my Pokemon tattoo, like Cyndaquil evolution. And he's like, oh my god, I was actually just playing Pokemon Crystal the other day.
A real one or an emulator?
I don't know. I didn't ask, but I just thought it was funny that you brought up Crystal and I just had someone bring up Crystal to me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And Pokemon Crystal, by the way, guys, is like the second rarest. It's Pokemon Emerald and then Pokemon Crystal, I think. I say rarest. There's literally tens of millions of them out there, but they think they're rare and they sell them for unimaginable prices online. It's all horseshit. Don't believe the hype, guys. Don't believe the hype.
Don't believe it.
But yeah, those are the games we were playing this week. So let's just jump into this week's game. We are playing Super Mario Brothers.
Not World.
We fucked that up. He fucked that up. I fucked it up by sending him the wrong one. But my intention was Super Mario Brothers, the 1985 release.
Yes.
All right, so we're just going to jump right into the story about the creation of the game here.
All right, give it to us.
Yeah, the story of Super Mario Bros. Starts with the creator and designer, Shigeru Miyamoto. If I fuck up the names of these guys, they're all Japanese guys. Please don't yell at me. I'm sorry, I don't speak Japanese. Miyamoto had worked on previous games such as Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., Donkey Kong 3, and the first real Mario game, Mario Bros. And I don't know if you guys know this about Mario Bros. I actually never knew that there was a Mario Bros. Before Super Mario Bros. It's just like a single screen of multiple platforms. And there's Koopas that come out of pipes that you have to kind of kill, collect stuff like cherries and shit that go across the screen, like fruits and coins and such. But in this instance of Koopas, they actually didn't have the ability to jump on top of the Koopas. If you jumped on top of the Koopa, you would die.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you had to jump. You had to wait till the Koopa was on a platform above you.
And then hit it underneath.
Yep, hit it underneath, and that would kill them.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting that they changed it so much. Let's see, where was I here?
I've never actually seen the... just the regular Mario Bros or whatever, but I've heard about it.
It does not look as fun as Super Mario Bros. I'm just going to tell you right now. It looks really boring as shit. But it was a multiplayer game, which is good. You could play as either Mario or Luigi, I believe, in both games.
Nice. Yeah, I know you can do that in Super Mario Bros. Yep. So.
Mario had made cameos in each of these games except for Mario Bros., where he actually was the main character. The original Mario was named Jumpman. So from Donkey Kong onward until Super Mario Bros. Or Mario Bros., it was just Jumpman.
Yep.
Miyamoto had designed all of these games on his own. For Super Mario Bros., it was decided to add a partner for this venture, Takashi Tezuka. The two soon began working on the game as best they could. For designs of the game, they had to draw the levels on graph paper. They would layer notes on the graph paper, and if they ran out of room on the graph paper, they would have an overlay to place on top of the graph paper in order to give more notes. They wanted to make sure all the notes were in for the programmers so the programmers wouldn't get mad at them for adding things after they had already programmed the game.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
So they would literally get the notes, the graph paper, everything on a level. So the levels were like drawn out on graph paper.
That's insane. Yeah.
So they would get that and they would program it, but it would take them all night to program it. So then if they gave additional notes, it would get really fucking annoying because then they'd have to go back and reprogram that entire level from square one. You can't use what you have. You have to start all over again.
I get it now. So, I see why that's important.
Yeah, it would really piss off the programmers who were programming. I think they were programming with assembly, which is like a really, it's what all Linux users use to program, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think that makes sense. To make like Linux operations. But
yeah.
Notes. I need to find a good way to read this shit without losing my place. they wanted to make sure all the notes, programmers. At the same time they were working on Super Mario Bros., they were actually working on Legend of Zelda. Some of the things in Legend of Zelda actually made an appearance in the finished product for Super Mario Bros. You know the fire ropes? Yeah, the ones that spin around that you have to duck and jump over?
Yeah.
Those are actually from Legend of Zelda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so those they decided to take those and put them in both because they work so well in Legend of Zelda that they wanted both of to be in both games just to have an easier way of translating and have another obstacle that Mario had to jump through in order to move on to the next part.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Sorry, guys, I keep losing my place. Yeah. To test the functionality of the game, such as jumping, the game was just programmed with a red square and a black background. This laid the foundation of the game as a pure platformer. Early concept art of the game actually showed Mario riding a Yoshi. That was scrapped for the final product, and Yoshi didn't make an appearance until later games. The sounds of the game had a weird story in themselves. Apparently, most of the sounds for Nintendo games were put in the game a month before the release.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
Isn't that crazy? Like,
for how good all the sounds are, doing it that last minute sounds insane.
Yeah, it's really strange that they would just, I don't know, like, wouldn't you want a placeholder in there in order to find out if the sound would fit, if it was fun or something? Like, but I'm guessing programming sounds was hard in games. I don't know from back then. It probably wasn't easy.
Probably not.
With Super Mario Bros., they wanted a placeholder sounds in the early development of the game so they could see if the processors could keep up with the sounds and gameplay. All music for the game was written by Koji Kondo. The first song for the game was actually the underwater music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Kondo really liked the music for sea areas, but when it came to land, he felt like the pace of the music was too slow for the pace of the game. He soon fixed this and made the music that people will recognize today. Other games that he worked on, by the way, Legend of Zelda. He's basically been part of all of the biggest Nintendo games from the mid to late 80s to almost all the way through the 90s. His list was
insane. So all the important Nintendo games that they still use. Everyone talks about the soundtrack being amazing.
And all the sound bites that are still around today, like, he made them. Like, that, he's just the guy who did all that.
That's insane. Yeah, he's one talented person.
Yeah, one very rich guy.
Seriously, though, that's insane.
They went a little bit out of the box with the actual designs of colors of the game. Normal games at the time, especially games Miyamoto worked on, were made with black backgrounds. Designers did this mainly because they wanted to easily contrast other colors so they could more easily be seen.
Makes sense.
You know, there's not a big group of colors that you can work on back then, that as many as there are now, right?
Yeah.
So,
that's true.
And Mario Miyamoto decided he wanted to do a blue background, which hadn't really been done too much before. The game also had other design perks to save memory room. If you look at the clouds and the bushes, they actually are the same design, just color differently. One's green, one's white. They also wanted more of the level to be able to be seen by the player, so they decided to zoom out of the map to make this possible. But this made Mario appear tiny. In early meetings for the game, the designers made it clear that they wanted Mario to be large. He wanted a larger-than-life character.
Okay.
So the fact that zooming out made him small was not something the designers liked. A compromise was made by having both a large and a small version of Mario. Once Mario eats a mushroom, he becomes large. Bowser also had a strange design story. The design for Bowser is actually based off a 1960 Toei animation movie. Character, the Ox King in the movie Alakazam the Great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1960. That movie came out in 1960. The movie is loosely based off Journey to the West. If anyone knows Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z, Journey to the West is Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. Son Goku's in there. All those people are in there. The first design of Bowser was a bit awkward. Bowser having a head of an ox and the body of a turtle. Eventually, they designed him a bit better, and it worked to create the character that we all know and love today. In the early ideas of the game, they wanted to build a world that had three sections: land, sea, and sky. After debating for a while, they decided to take sky out of the game because they couldn't program it. It was really hard to program sky for some reason. I'm not sure why. They didn't really get into details of why it was so hard to program the sky, but it was really hard to program. After some pushback from Tezuka, the non-Miyamoto guy, they put the sky back in the game. They decided to have the player make it to the sky world with a beanstalk that came out after smashing a block. The beanstalk was, of course, based on Jack and the Beanstalk. I doubt anyone is unaware, but if they are, the story of Jack and the Beanstalk follows a boy traded their family cow for a sack of magic beans. Upon seeing the beans and not food that he was supposed to trade the cow for, his mother threw him out the window. But the next morning, the beans had grown into a huge climbable beanstalk that leads to a giant's castle and treasure.
I always, like, it's funny when you say stuff like that, because, like, I feel like everyone should know that story, but,
we're but in
I feel
such
like
a
the
weird...
further and further we go in time, I feel like the less and less people talk about
I don't
those
know who the
stories.
Fuck... I remember reading that when I was a kid. I don't know if that's still even a book that people have in fucking schools, so...
Well, seriously. And, well, like, I know they had, like, I think it was, like, a 20... Like, early 2010s, like, Jack and the Beanstalk, or Jack the Giant Slayer movie.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the last time I heard that story
For sure. I was like, if I'm gonna hear a Giants thing anymore, I'm gonna probably hear about the BFG. BFG than Jack and the Beanstalk. So, the designers then needed to figure out a way to get down.
Fall.
Okay. Well, yeah, that was the idea. They said the best thing to do, since Mario could not take damage from falling from any height, was to jump. This was problematic, though. Any other time the player fell down into a hole, into another frame, they died. They needed to find a way to encourage the player to make the leap of faith, so they decided to put a coin just within jumping range. The coins of the game cannot be unattainable, so the player would trust the designers and make the jump, knowing that this would not lead to death. Another interesting detail about Super Mario Bros. Versus Mario Bros. Was the way the Koopas were defeated. We talked about this a little bit at the front.
Jumping on their heads.
Yeah, in the original Mario Bros., the player had to hit a block from underneath while the Koopa was on top of it.
Which I love that they have both options in this.
Yeah, this was scrapped for Super Mario Bros. Because the designers didn't think it made any sense that jumping on a Koopa's head would kill the player.
Yeah.
The bad guys in the game had a bit of a revamp near the end of the game as well. As they reached the end of the game, they realized that the player was thrown directly... Oh, shoot, I went too far. Hold on. No!
As they reached the end of the game,
they realized that a player thrown directly into the Koopas might have trouble learning how to defeat them. So instead, they added Goombas in order to have an introductory villain that was slower and easier to understand. By starting slow and gradually increasing the difficulty of the villain, they hoped the player would have a more enjoyable playing experience. The first worlds created in the game were actually worlds 3 and 5.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, these worlds were far too advanced to start the player off on.
Yeah.
The team decided to make an introductory world in into, oh my god, I wrote this all stupid. The team decided to make an introductory world in order to ease the player in. This way, the player could get the feel of how the game was played without taking too much risk. It's funny that World 1 was one of the last worlds introduced. True. Yeah, it's literally the last world they made was World 1.
But I guess if you know kind of like what you're wanting to go for, it might be easier to make a starting off point to get to that than it would be to make the starting out point first.
For sure. I mean, they had a lot of problems with testers not having fun with the original starting places. That one of the main reasons that they put an additional world that was easier, literally just because the testers were not having fun.
All right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So if a tester isn't having fun, then why would they think anyone who's playing the game who buys it would be? Right.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're making the game, you've obviously played it a lot, and you can probably beat those worlds a lot easier than just some person coming into it first time.
Yep.
So if so many people are struggling with your first world, then you know that that game's probably not going to do well.
Yep. Hold on. The first world also featured a mushroom right at the start. If you notice, it is in a clearly marked box, and you don't have to get it right when it pops out of the mushroom. It will hit a nearby pipe and be bumped into your direction. This was done on purpose to introduce the players to the effect of the mushrooms. So,
what is that thing coming at me?
Well, it is funny because like you don't think of that. You don't think of the ease of access of that first mushroom. You just think, okay, yeah, I got a mushroom right away. But for people who had never played a game like this before, they had no idea what that mushroom would do. In previous games, they probably knew that gaining fruit or vegetables got you points. You know, gaining the coins get you points. Yeah. So they would go for the mushroom. It's clearly, it's got like a very friendly, welcoming face on it. And then when you get it, then you grow.
I remember there's like a anti-Mario version of this game where the first mushroom actually kills you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was one of those like trick Mario games where like
that's they talk a lot about Mario Maker.
Mario Maker
is an amazing thing that they did. Then they're like, all the work that we had to put in 1985 to make Mario, you guys can literally do in 3 minutes.
Yeah,
just so insane. You know, we did that so you could understand how much work we went through without having to deal with all the shit we dealt with when we were doing it. It is crazy.
Seriously, though.
Another game Miyamoto worked on was Excitebike. Excitebike was a game where the player rode a motorcycle and did jumps off ramps. This game also had the option for players to choose a level they wanted to start on. That way, when someone was more advanced at playing, they could go straight to a difficulty that wouldn't bore them. They wanted to introduce this option in Mario, without making it too obvious what they were doing. They added the warp pipes in several areas of the game that could take a player to levels they were more excited to play rather than make them start at the front of the game each time. A fun glitch in the original game was the coin block that would let you keep hitting it to get multiple coins.
Yes.
After testers found this, the team decided it was a fun glitch and they kept it in the final product of the game. After all the programming and designing, Mario hit the streets of Japan September 18th, 1985. The U.S. release date is actually unknown. Nobody really knows when the game actually hit stores, but there is a large debate online for several different days. All in 1985, all within like between September and November.
Oh, okay. So, it's just not sure the exact release date or something.
Nobody has any idea which store had it first, where it came out. Like, it's crazy. It's like, I don't know how you don't know that. There's no sales receipts for it. Those have been lost.
It's before Google existed.
Well,
so
like
we don't know
normally
anything.
Companies keep the sales receipts and they didn't. It's really strange.
That's true.
Let's see. Of the original game, 40.24 million copies were sold worldwide. 29 million in the US alone.
Insane numbers.
And that is the history of Super Mario Bros.
Incredible. Incredible history.
Incredible.
Thank you for that lesson. I guess with all that said, I think let's just get right into our first main subject here. The best and the worst. So this section, since this is our first time going into these sections, I'll kind of give a little rundown. This is all the best and worst parts of the games that we think are going to make or break your purchasing decisions.
Yeah.
For me, this game is one of the best things about it. The game is very short, and I think one of the easiest platformers out there.
Yep.
Like, I'm a person who hates platformers, who sucks at platformers, who gripes about platforming all the time. You can have Scott vouch for that. Yep. He's played platformers with me. It's terrible. But this game is really, really easy. And I think almost anybody can complete this game, especially if you're playing it on an emulator with save states.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This game, the best thing about this game, honestly, is the simplicity in it.
Yeah.
It's a fun game.
Two buttons and a D-pad.
Yeah, it's a fun game. You won't do too much. You won't play this with friends at a party anymore. There's a ton of fucking better games out there to play, honestly.
Yeah.
But it's still fun to pick up every once in a while and just give it a shot.
Well, yeah, and this game does have a two-player mode, but it's not really worth going into because you have to wait till the other person dies to get your turn. And so, like, if you're playing with a good player, a player who knows, like, all the warp pipe areas and stuff like that, they can actually beat the game before you even get a turn.
Well,
so it's not
you
really
still
even
get a turn. Remember, it's a score-based thing. Whoever has the best score.
Yeah, I guess it is based off a score, so I guess that does make sense.
But still, it's boring as shit to watch. So, like, what if the thing lasted, like, 2.5 hours, and you're watching someone play for 2.5 hours, then someone watches you play for 2.5 hours? I'd put that in the worst, because that's just such a dumb...
Yeah, it is definitely the worst part of it.
I bet back in the day that was amazing. Like, no one had ever even seen that before.
For sure.
And I know we're harping a little hard on it, guys. You have to understand, this game is not within my reach or his reach. We were born after 1985. We weren't kids when this game came out. We don't have the nostalgia feelings. If I had to rank a Mario game, I'd put like a million above this one, right? Super Mario 3 is fucking a phenomenally
Super
fun.
Super Mario World 3, yeah, Bros. 3.
Yeah, that game is so much fun. Even more recent, like, Mario 64's, Super Mario,
Mario
Sunshine,
Galaxy,
Sunshine, Galaxy,
Odyssey.
Like Odyssey, all of them. Even World's fun.
The new worlds and stuff, the 3DS world or whatever. Yeah. All those things. There are incredible Mario games for sure. And yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, this one is just Mario's the start, gone. You know. That's why it gets a little bit more recognition. It's the start of something amazing.
That being said, though, you were bringing up, like, we don't have a ton of nostalgia for it. Mario was, like, the second game I ever... I think Super Mario World was, like, the second game I had ever played.
Yeah.
I think the first game I ever played was the original Rambo game on the Sega console, or I can't remember what console that was. It was the old rectangle controller with the square buttons. But, so Mario still is a big nostalgic thing for me, but, yeah, I didn't play the original until probably, like, getting closer to adulthood.
Yeah, and I mean... To be fair, we would have played, like, other ones after that were way better that we would have just completely overshadowed this. My mom did buy it. You want to guess what my mom bought? So she bought the original Game Boy, right? Not the color, that giant fucking brick of a Game Boy. Mm-hmm. And then she bought three games. One of them was Mario. Do you want to guess the other two games she bought?
Mario and Mario again?
No. She bought Monopoly.
Oh, okay.
And Solitaire.
I mean, fair enough.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? You actually could buy fucking Monopoly and Solitaire on the original Game Boy.
That is crazy. I didn't think Monopoly was going to be on a Game Boy.
Yep.
Like, I think I've seen it on, like, I think there was a package on the Game Boy Advance for Monopoly and Battleship together.
I remember that. But no, they actually had a Monopoly where you could play two-player mode in it. It's really interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, I used to play with my mom, and it was really boring.
I mean, fair.
We had a Sega Genesis, so I'm playing Sonic the fucking Hedgehog, which is a way better game than Monopoly.
Yeah, and then you probably had the board game yourself, so you'd just rather play it on that than play it on the... Yeah.
Silly.
Another part of the best of this, we kind of already said it a little bit, the music and sound effects for this game are just so iconic.
It is
so incredible.
Good.
So
I mean, it's
like,
to the point where people still
to.
Use them today for the fucking games. Like, they're still referenced in every single Mario game today.
I mean, every time I was playing it, my wife was, like, whistling along to the tune or humming along to the tune or, like, having fun with it. And we were just both imitating it at all times.
Is the underwater one the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da?
Yeah.
I always think of that song. I love that fucking song. It's such a fun one.
All of it. There's not a single song in this or tone or anything that I don't like.
Yeah.
I love the sound design for this game, and hearing that it's done all in the last month of the programming is insane to me because of how good it is, how much it goes against time itself. Yep. Like, I still love the sounds, and honestly, the sounds are what drives the game for me in a lot of ways.
For sure. I think one of the worst things about this game, near the end of the game, you have a bunch of puzzles you have to solve, basically, like, routes you have to take that are very specific.
Oh, that was so annoying. Yeah,
it's really annoying, because you're like, oh, god damn, do I have to really guess?
It's inventive.
I wonder if there was something that, like, clued you into the routes. I had to look them up, because I could not remember.
I got them randomly. It was one of those things where I was like, okay, I'm just going to just keep going around and pass until I find it.
I did that for a while, like, okay, I just don't want to keep, like, guessing shit. I'm just going to look them up. Yeah. But I'm guessing there's no way they didn't include them somewhere in the game. I didn't bother looking it up, but I'm curious if that's the case. If you guys know, please send me a...
Yes.
Send us an email, soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear if, like, there's some kind of clue in the game to know the routes.
That would be awesome, actually.
Yeah.
I would really love
That would be amazing if they did that, because what an intuitive thing to do early in the game.
True.
If we missed it, maybe we're just stupid, you know? You never know.
One of the worst parts of the game, we talked about, like, the multiplayer already being a bad part of the game. The other thing is, well, and I wrote this before I found this Easter egg, so it's kind of going to be a segue into our next section a little bit, or a little pre-recognition for that, but... When you had a game over, you actually had to restart the entire game.
Yep.
Back at World 1, Level 1.
Yep.
And I say that I hated this, but I recently was doing some research on the game and found out that there is actually a secret in this game that if you hold the A button when you get to the game over and you go back to the main menu, if you hold the A button and then hit start, you go back to the world that you were on, Level 1 of that world.
Because
so if you died on 4-2, you
Steven, it's
back
really
on
funny
4-1.
That you didn't know that, because that's like one of the things everybody knows about Mario.
I didn't know that!
Well, and it's funny because... We don't think about it, but the NES actually has RAM.
Yeah.
Right? So it does have, like, this temporary memory storage that's saved, and that's where that comes in. It, like, saves that moment in time for you.
Yeah.
But if you turn the game off, then you wouldn't be able to do that same thing, I don't think. I don't think there's any capacity for it to actually save that information.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're completely right. But, yeah, I was kind of mad at myself that I didn't realize that. Not that I, like... I was playing on an emulator, so it was save stating, so I didn't actually get a game over screen.
I loved the emulator save state stuff, man. That is so much more. It's so much more enjoyable to not have to sweat it so much. I bet people in the fucking 80s were just sitting there like, "You're gonna die here, dude. You're gonna die and ruin the game this whole time." I can't imagine.
Like, I remember playing these games and just hating dying because of that shit. Or going, like, in Super Mario World, because you could actually go back and play old levels.
Yeah.
I would, like, when I started running low on lives, I'd go back to the first level
and just
get a shit ton of lives and then go back. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Like, then that's, you know, in the future, that's just what people did for years. And then they're like, all right, we'll put some save states in games. We'll give you guys a break from all this bullshit.
Which, if you play on this, on the Nintendo Switch Online, they have all these, like, emulator versions of all these games on there. Best ways to play these games, by the way. Best ways.
Yeah.
And it's super cheap, because Nintendo Switch Online, I think, is $4 a month or something.
No,
like
it's a probably. It's $30 a year for the base one, or maybe $20 a year, and then $50 a year for the, you get to play N64 and Game Boy Advance games and such.
Yeah. But I think that's it for that section, unless you have anything else you want to talk about with best and worst.
Nope. Well, let's jump right into the hunt for the eggs.
Yes, so the hunt for the eggs. So this game is actually have 32 levels in the game. There's 4 levels per world, there's 8 worlds. But with this, there is actually a way that you can beat this game by only playing 8 levels using the warp pipes we previously talked about.
Whoa! Is that what you were, is that what you were waiting for there?
Yes, I was waiting for something. Give me some excitement, man.
Whoa!
I'm sure you probably already know all these secrets So
most of the Mario stuff is like out there on the internet everywhere, so.
There was one that I didn't know that I actually had to go back into the game afterwards and see it for myself. Because I was like, wait, what? How did I miss that completely? But yes, on level 1-2, there's a hidden area that you can get on top of the map. and go over the pipe that ends, gets you to the end of the level, and it takes you to a warp pipe area with three pipes that lead you to either World 2, World 3, mm-hmm. or World 4. Then again, once you're on level 4, Tash 2, there's another hidden area. There's actually two hidden areas in this level. So there's another one on top of the level, past the pipe, just like in that first world. But that only leads you to a pipe that leads you to World 5. But if at the beginning of the level, or towards like the middle of the level, there's an area with some blocks that are up really high next to an elevator that's coming down. And if you jump underneath it, there will be, and you have to be small for this, if you jump underneath it, it actually will have some hidden blocks appear, and you can hit one of the bricks on the far left, and it'll come up with one of those vines Scott talked about that leads you back to the surface area of the map, and it leads you to a world pipe area with three hidden pipes again that leads you to zones 6, 7, and 8. And that's the one I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And I was mad because I was like, I warped to 4, and then I warped to 5, and then I actually played 5, 6, 7, 8. And then I was like, wait, I could have warped to 8? Bitch! But yeah, no, just really, really cool. I love that they put those in there. Another small little Easter egg on level 3-1 at the end, like, staircase area that leads up to the flagpole that you can jump to. There's a green-shelled Koopa that's going down the stairs, and if you jump on it right when it's at the end of a step, and you jump on it again to get make the shell go forward, it actually, if you do it just right, you can actually get like a chain where you're constantly jumping on it and it's hitting the platform, and you're just sitting there gaining infinite lives.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Because it starts out, you get like 200 points, then 400 points, then 800 points, then 1600 points, then 2000, and then you go extra life, extra life, extra life, extra life, extra life. And you could sit there. I saw a guy do it for like 2 minutes, and then he got so many lives that it actually had like a king like emblem for his lives when he went to the next screen.
That's cool.
Like, it just like was an emblem of, we don't know what to even say for how many lives you have. So I thought that was really interesting. And then there was one other secret that I saw in this that was really interesting. I didn't actually try this one, but in level 1-2, instead of going on top of the level to get to the warp pipe area, if you just jump on top of the warp pipe itself, on the ground level of that, and then you crouch jump when you're large Mario, and then jump towards the wall, you can actually clip the wall itself and go through to the warp tube area, but it doesn't actually show you the world numbers doing it that way. Mm. It doesn't actually break the screen to have the piranha plants go back down, and you can enter the far left pipe, and it takes you to world blank level -1, and it's an underwater level that no matter if you beat it or whatever, it just keeps resetting back to this level. So it actually like breaks the game and puts you in an endless loop level.
That's fucking sweet. You know what would be really cool if that was like a horror movie? You know right? How there's a bunch of animes now where they like are in a video game or whatever? What if you're mm-hmm. just in that fucking level?
I mean, that's kind of like Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Groundhog Day loop,
yeah.
The same thing over again, and you get murdered at the end of every day.
But like, at the like, end of every level, you're just like, when will it end?
No, seriously, though. And it's and you actually have to reset the game for it to actually take you back to the original first world.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So that's all I have for all the Easter eggs in this. There's not a ton, because it's such an early game. Yeah. There's not a lot to this game. And we didn't really mention this game earlier, but it is a game that you can beat in about an hour.
Yeah. Oh, we did mention it. We mentioned it when that was one of our things that we liked.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we said it was short. Yeah.
Very short. If you play like maybe an original form of the game where you're a brand new player and you're not going to use save states, it might take you upwards of 5 to 6 hours to beat it, just to understand how the game goes and waste all your lives and restart and not use any of the cheats or tricks to stay on the world you're on, you know.
True. So I guess with that said, we shall go into our last section where we tell you what it's worth. So we want to go on and just kind of mention this too, since it's our first time, and just say that with growing concern for value, from I've been hearing it on a lot of people in a lot of TikTok videos, or just a lot of reviews in general, We believe that the value of the game doesn't come just from game length or hours of her completion. We take into consideration the entire package. The games with the best value have an engaging story, great gameplay, exciting visuals, memorable characters, and world building. So, with that said, how many souls do you give this game?
So we're doing it on a scale of 1 to 5 here, guys. 5 being the best, 1 being, like, horse shit garbage you find on top of the trash can on fire. Honestly, I'd give it a 2.
That's fair.
This is not a game I'd go out of my way to play whatsoever. If it wasn't so easily playable, I probably, you know, I wouldn't even want to download this as an emulator on my computer or on my little Game Boy emulator device. It's just, it's fun. It's good time wasting. It's not that fun. It's not that cool.
I think that's a really solid, actually, rating for this game. I was kind of debating with myself what I would rate it, because I was like, do I do, like, 2? Do I do 3? Do I do 4? Like, it's such an iconic game. Yeah. It's so memorable, but, like, it's really short. There isn't a ton of things to it. There's so many other better Mario games, like we kind of mentioned before. I think I'm in agreement here that a 2 is a great rating for this, because I think there is some value to it, and some people will find value in it, and just, like, going back and seeing where it started, but I don't think it's, like, an incredible game. It's way too easy. It's not very challenging, especially on an emulator console. Like, it's nostalgic, but I don't want to give a game a high rating just because of nostalgia.
It's true, and the nostalgia for us, again, guys, is not as prudent as it would be for a kid whose parents bought them this game in 1985.
Like, nostalgia for Scott is definitely Sonic. Yeah. Nostalgia for me is definitely Banjo-Kazooie and Mario 64.
You're going to have that nostalgia factor when you play a game that you really loved as a kid. Because I didn't really play this as a kid and didn't really like it that much. Like, I had, there were so many better games out when I was a kid than fucking Mario 85.
Like we said, Super Mario World 3 was probably one of ours, like, most nostalgic Mario games.
That one is so good. Because
that is one of the best, and still one of my, probably top 5 Mario games. Like, it's incredible, and I love every bit of that, especially the stage play.
Yeah, and, that one with secrets and hidden shit is so much more. God, whizzles. That one is so fucking good. So this one, it's just, it's hard to put this one higher than a 2 for me, and I know it's hard for you too. It's just, there are better Mario games now. If we rated this back in 85, I'm sure we would have given it a 5, hands down.
Oh yeah, I mean, in 85, this is a 5 game.
You
want
to compare this to Baldur's Gate? This is literally that pile of shit we found on top of a trash can, you know what I mean? Like,
see, and that's the thing that sucks with some of these games, is like, comparing something like the original Mario to Baldur's Gate 3 is just unfathomable.
Yeah, you can't do
it. It's not possible.
That's the unfortunate part about not having that nostalgia factor, because the nostalgia factor would work wonders in this, and we'd probably give it a 4 or 5.
I mean, nostalgia alone, like I said, the soundtrack and the music bites alone are worth a 4 or a 5 for me.
For sure.
The game as a whole package, I agree with Scott, is a 2.
All right, guys, that's our that's our little review of Super Mario Bros. We hope you enjoyed it.
We got to announce next week's game.
Yeah, you want to tell them?
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to wait until posting it on the website or something. Well, let's just fucking tell them.
Well, I mean, if you want to wait.
No, let's tell them. Tell them the fucking game.
All right, well, Scott mentioned that he's still finishing this game earlier, so you have a little bit of a clue, but it is Baldur's Gate 3!
Nice.
We're finally doing a review for that game.
Yep, and we will get that to you as soon as we're done. So, thanks for listening, guys.
We love you.
We hope you enjoyed our new and improved Soul of a Gamer. If you're a first-time listener, please just reach out and give us a review, do whatever. So.
And if you are an old listener, came back, and you want to let us know, like, please tell us if you like this new style better, or if this is more engaging, more, like, not in-depth, I guess. Like it is more in-depth in certain areas, but we definitely divulged more away from just telling you bit by bit, this is everything that's in the game, and this is more just this is why the game is and why you should buy it.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lot more fun. Yeah,
for sure. We hope you guys had fun. So we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.